The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Ellen Road podcast. About last night, that wasn't half bad. Leeds United are off to Wembley in the Championship playoff final, potentially 90 minutes from a return to Premier League football. A truly excellent night at Ellen Road against Norwich City, one so many of you, I'm sure, will cherish. Graham, the most pressing question of all, though, is are you planning on doing anything different for your visit to the home of football? Something with your hair, perhaps?
I think I should dye my beard yellow, blue, and white.
Hey, you know what? It would not be the zaniest thing that I've seen in a press box.
Yeah.
Such as you wearing shorts.
Are you tired? You enjoyed that. Are you tired today, Joe?
Yeah, I'm quite tired. Yeah, it was a late one. We're up at the crack of dawn, or the crack of the work day, to record this. I've already had a message from a friend of the podcast, Birmingham White. I don't even think asking is the right word. Begging for an episode today. Clamoring for an episode today. And I was delighted to be able to tell them that yes, that is on its way. So here it is. An absolutely fantastic night at Ellen Road.
Am I tired?
Sorry?
Am I tired, Joe?
Are you tired?
Well, you didn't ask. So how would you know?
I didn't ask, yeah. Because you're always tired. That's your living state.
It's boring, isn't it? Staying up half the night writing verdicts so people have something to read in the morning. Not for me. I like it.
And how is the verdict doing this morning? Got enough eyes on it for your liking?
No, I could always do with more, but it's a slow burner. People will come back to it and relive it time and time again, I think. I enjoyed that game, Joe, and I enjoyed writing about that game. It's been a little while coming. But that was so much more representative of the Leeds United that won all those games between January and March. I think what impressed me most about the performance was when Martin Allen was Chesterfield manager, right? He used to talk about, whenever you dared to talk about style of play, you know, with a team that bombed it from its big centre backs up to a target man, not all of the time, they did play football. So that kind of led to questions about, well, why did today you go a bit more direct, or why did you start so direct? And he always used to say, you have to earn the right to play. You have to win your headers. You have to play in the right area. You have to get it forward and put the other team under pressure, et cetera, et cetera. Leeds United did that last night. Now, they didn't do it in a way of, we're going to start direct and bombard Norwich and win the seconds and play in the final third. But they just battered them physically all over the pitch. I'd love to know the numbers in duels last night in terms of what Leeds won and where, because it felt to me like Ethan Ampadu lost one duel all night and Melier, you know, saved his blushes there. I don't know if Rodon lost one. I'm not sure if Ampadu lost a header. Kamara either won the ball or he took the man out. Gruev either won the ball or he felt his man's collar and dragged him by the neck to the turf. Archie Gray, you know, lost a couple of 50-50s on Sunday at Carrow Road. I don't recall him losing a 50-50 last night. And his performance, the physicality he brought to that performance in terms of his running past or away from players, in terms of brushing players off and protecting the ball, it just felt like the exact right level of physicality from Leeds. And it was almost like turbocharged. It was Leeds United on steroids. Leeds United could have been a 1990s wrestling superstar with that performance last night. Juiced to the gills.
preferably one that doesn't have roid rage. But with your point on duels, it's a statistic which is difficult to quantify because the way that it gets collected is problematic to say the least. So Instead, I'm going to read out a number of other statistics, which maybe do paint the picture. Expected goals, Leeds United 2.74 to Norwich's 0.57. Shots, 18 to Norwich's 4. Shots inside the box, 15 of the 18 were inside the penalty area. 9 interceptions, 10 tackles won. 479 accurate passes at an 88% success rate, 200 of which were in the opposition half. 19 long balls, which was around half accuracy, which is very, very high. 6 accurate crosses out of 10, which again, very high. 34 touches in Norwich City's box. 11 of their 18 aerial duels won, while there was 13 successful dribbles as well. They absolutely dominated. There is not a metric which doesn't suggest that from this game. You know, Norwich were well and truly comprehensively beaten, and that was the type of performance which basically wipes the slate clean. You know, the past few weeks have been really difficult. The past 6 weeks, probably. You know, ever since losing at Coventry at the beginning of last month, have all been very, very tricky. It looked as though they'd lost their way. It looked as though they'd lost momentum. And you did worry for how they would fare in the playoffs, because it's a completely new competition. It's all about momentum and what you take into it. Last night was, as you say, harking back to the, you know, the form of early 2024. It was just them at their very best. And I mean, I'll send you this shortly so you can have a look at it. But the shot map from last night, I know I've already mentioned they had 15 shots inside the penalty area. They're pretty much all, at least 13 of them, are from 12 yards or closer to the goal. They were just, they were not giving up. They were getting towards Angus Gunn's goal, and they were peppering it. And that's exactly what we needed to see.
They were, but you can only do that if you find each other, and you can only do that if the runs are there, the movement's there from the strikers or whoever's arriving in the box. You can only do it if Firpo or Nyonto or Somerville actually produce the right pass at the end of it. And that was another thing that really impressed me last night, was how cohesive they were in the attack. You know, the accuracy you mentioned, passes went to feet. And so they got shots away. Getting shots away is something they just haven't been doing as much of late. You know, I know Willy Nyonto is always keen to take one on, but I wanted to see more players get shots away, and they did that. The play in the final third was great. You know, how many times did Somerville or Firpo get to the byline and cut it back and make something of it? And, you know, a lot of this season, there's been criticism of Farke's style for it being maybe a bit pedestrian, maybe being a bit predictable or slow. At times that hasn't been justified. At other times there's been more of a case for it. Think of all the criticism Glenn Kamara's had because people said he could only pass backwards. Last night, I think all in any criticism you would have of this Leeds team, you could go through the team actually and the things that players have taken flak for, sometimes entirely justifiably, and other times maybe not so much. And all the criticism was answered.
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Graham, because we've got some breaking Inside Elland Road podcast news, or more playoff semi-final Norwich City news. It's been reported that David Wagner has been sacked by Norwich, which is...
Wow.
Yeah, that's massive. And you know what? There was a question last night, wasn't there, in Wagner's press conference, where he was asked if he's still the right man to take the team forward next season, which is very interesting considering now. I mean, I wouldn't have seen that coming. I think they gave a good account of themselves in the first leg, but, you know, we're just simply outclassed in the second. I mean, the manner of the defeat, yes, is probably quite concerning, but I don't know. Did Norwich have a right to be in the playoffs?
I think he's done a great job to get them in there. I think he did a great job in the first leg. They were pretty on top for a lot of the first half an hour at Carrow Road. I don't think you could put last night's result on him. I think you have to say that the players have to look at themselves and say, why didn't I win my headers? Ashley Barnes, why did you... The only time that he wasn't in Ethan Ampadu's pocket, he was crawling through Joe Rodon's legs.
Or trudging off the pitch. To
Can you remember anything he did that you thought, yeah, he's getting the best of here, or he's the arm wrestle's going the other way?
He got under Junior Firpo's skin very temporarily at a corner with Norwich already 2-0, yeah. Maybe even 3-0 yeah. down. But that's about
even then, he still made himself look like a bit of a berk because of the nature in which he went down. And Jared Gillette, the best ref a man can get. I know it's not Gillette. He was not buying it. He wasn't buying anything that anybody was selling that wasn't genuine last night. Let's just talk about him for a second. We've had so many referees this season that, God bless them, you know, I'm sure they're trying their best, but they haven't been very good. You know, there's been a lot of refereeing performances with decisions for and against Leeds. You know, yeah, we could talk about all the decisions that Daniel Farke likes to bring up. We could also talk about Patrick Bamford chicken winging the ball into the net. We could talk about Nyonto being a full three Willy Nyonto lengths offside at Middlesbrough. There's been times when didn't Leicester score a goal that should have stood as well at Elland Road. It was very, very contentious and very tight at least.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of decisions this season that just haven't been very good. And I thought old mate from Australia was just fantastic last night. He got everything that he needed to get spot on, absolutely bang on. The spot in that dive by Jonathan Rowe, because from where we were, and Wagner was doing his nut. Archie Gray makes a little stab towards the ball with his leg. Rowe goes down, and it just looks like the most natural thing in the world is that Gray has clipped him. And the replay shows that Gray actually withdrew the challenge, knowing that he wasn't going to get there, and Rowe just threw himself to the ground. And referee saw it. So he also used his yellow cards when he had to. Like, he let stuff go. There's a lot of physicality in the first few minutes that he let go. You know, players going down, he'd had a look at it, and he'd be like, no, you can get up from me. And that was for both sides. And then when he had to use his yellows, there was only one time I thought he was lenient, and that was when Glenn Kamara thought he could have a nibble at the ball in the final third and slid in and wiped out his man. It was almost a bit of a scissor challenge. I thought that was a yellow. But other than that, 9 out of 10 for the man in the middle.
Yeah, it was a lot of nines last night, wasn't it? A lot of eights, a lot of nines. Did anyone get less than an eight?
The subs.
Oh, right, okay. I mean, that's kind of a technicality, isn't it?
You don't get an eight or a nine in the lottery, Joe. It has to be earned.
I thought, you know, they deserved quite a lot for a lot of praise for their celebrations for the first two goals, you know, onto the pitch. I do like that when a substitute's bench just vacates instantaneously and sort of instinctively as well. Should we talk about the goals then?
Absolutely.
That first one, after I'd sent a, which now looks a very, very prescient tweet, I'm getting the word nice early goal. And what a nice early goal it was. Ilya Gruev finding his shooting boots at the most opportune time of the season. And you know, running away to straight away to the bench, sort of pointing to his head, almost like it was intentional. A great, great piece of, I don't know, would you call it ingenuity, trickery? Straight off the training ground, you know, what sort of free kick are you describing that as?
Well, this is why I asked Daniel Farke, you know, was this just a bit of improvisation in the moment from Gruev, or was it something you worked on? And Farke said that they spotted it. Their analysts and Edmund Reimer were responsible for spotting it and exploiting it. They'd noticed that Angus Gunn, a little bit trigger happy perhaps with his positioning at free kicks on that side. And you could see in the replay that Gruev and Somerville were like having a little conversation. Is it on? Shall I? And Gruev turned to the bench, actually. I don't know if you saw. And he made this kind of motion to ask, am I whipping this one in? Am I curling it across? Or was it, perhaps he was saying, actually, am I going for goal here? Because he was getting all excited about Angus Gunn being that far to the other side of the goal. but you still have to get it right. The strike still has to be right, and it has to not take a deflection on the way through, and it has to not get blocked. It was a really good finish, really precise, and and Gunn wasn't going to get back to it, and he's probably kicking himself this morning because that first goal was absolutely crucial. If Leeds got the first goal, given the atmosphere when they walked out, if Leeds got the first goal, it was going to be really, really difficult for Norwich. So that was, you know, exactly what the doctor ordered.
We were saying as well that, you know, when Leeds go a goal up at Elland Road, they kind of just settle into their muscle memory of this season, in that they go a goal up and then they see that game out. I mean, how many times have we seen that this season where, you know, they've scored the opening goal and then the confidence has come back, and or not come back, the confidence has gone up a gear and it's been on display. And I think nobody epitomised that more than Jorginho Rutter. Because, I mean, yes, he's been out of sorts recently, but man of the match last night, according to Sky, I know you dispute that, but...
Wrong, but anyway, carry on.
but, yeah, he was back to his best. He was protecting the ball when he was dribbling. He was, you know, playing with his back to goal brilliantly. He was, you know, just taking men on at will, finding the right pass, not overcooking things. His touch wasn't like a trampoline. There was everything in that performance, I think. And yeah, we'll get on to his goal shortly. But number two, what was this? Was this your favourite? Because this is my favourite goal.
Yes, it is. Leeds were absolutely rampant. You could, once they went a goal up, I think I said to you that they could really kill Norwich in transition, because it felt like space was just opening up in a big way, and Willy Nyonto just frolicked into it, didn't he? You know, he goes steaming down the right. Pirou basically says, put it there, and points. And that cross from Nyonto is, I mean, I would back you or I to be able to get on the end of that and finish it. It was fantastic. Just really deep curling cross, hung it up to the back post perfectly, and Pirou gets on the end of it, and he has to, you know, still has to do the job of finishing it off. But yeah, that was the moment, I think, when we knew it was done. You're never going to say that, because you look like an absolute chump if you say it's done and then Norwich come back. And you know, there was a sliding doors moment not long after that, but at 2-0 up, I couldn't see this Leeds team surrendering that, not with the way they were playing, not with, like you mentioned, Jorginho Rutter in the first 15 minutes. He produced this little, lovely little backheel flick for Somerville to create the first chance when Somerville skied it from an acute angle. And not long after that, he went past someone. And the way he did it, the first time we've seen it in possibly, I don't want to say since the international break, because my memory isn't that good, but it's the first time in like seven games that I can recall seeing him skip away from someone. And then the step overs were coming out, and then he was retaining the ball, and he was coming away from it in implausible scenarios. And the tails were up, you know, they could smell blood. You could sense it. And what I loved about that whole period of the game was Farke saying, calm down. And trying to get his team to, as he says, prepare attacks properly. But Leeds just wanted to go for it. You know, they were 2-0 up and they were like, we can finish this right here, right now. And the crowd probably played a massive part in that, because it must be like a shot of adrenaline, you know, directly into the old ticker when you're going forward with the ball, or when you win the ball back aggressively like they did. And when you're that much on the front foot, how many times do we see Rodon or Ampadu or Gray or Kamara intercept or read something and tackle and win it, you know, not just inside the Norwich half? I mean, Rodon, a couple of his interceptions were at least 10 yards inside the Norwich half. He was playing like a defensive midfielder.
Well, that's where that free kick comes from, for the Gruev scores from, is that Rodon intercepts it initially in the move. Kamara keeps it alive, important to say. But yeah, Rodon intercepts and gets forward and is then fouled. It is difficult to stop when you're sort of trying to disrupt in that way, from a sort of defensive perspective. And yeah, they just, yeah, it was excellent. I mean, speaking to Joel Piru afterwards, he said that, you know, he and Willie Nyonto had sort of discussed that sort of ball previously, and sort of before the game, that you could see sort of as the move developed, Piru kind of peels off and sort of moves towards the back post, motions to Nyonto, right, stick it on my head. And, you know, a player of Nyonto's quality with the time and space that he had, he was very, very unlikely not to be able to whip a ball in just as he did. And yeah, you know what? Fair play to Piru as well, because he actually had a very good game as well.
Yeah.
Played like a man possessed, coming back into the starting lineup, having missed the first leg, or at least sat on the bench for the first leg to begin with. You know, he was alert. He contributed to attacks. Some of the one-touch passing was really on point. And yeah, I mean, he's basically booked his place in that team for the playoff final, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, the third goal owed a lot to him showing us all of a sudden that he had pace. Do you remember Leeds played Fulham, I think it was, at Elland Road, in the Premier League early on in the season, and I think they might have won 3-0 or 4-0.
Was this the lockdown season?
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it not? It was like the second game, wasn't it? After was they this, lost
yeah,
three,
super
three,
early in the goal. Season. And Costa scored with like a rasping volley from about 10 yards. And there was also a moment when Patrick Bamford, he had the ball on the left, exactly like Piru, squared up his man, pushed it past him and just sprinted by him and left him behind. And that always stuck with me, like thinking, God, I didn't expect that. And last night, third goal, again, Kamara involved, plays the ball to Piru. He lets it run across himself and the defender can't untangle his feet, can't sort his feet out, stumbles a little, and Piru's gone. And the next thing you know, he's level with the penalty area and crossing, and there's a bit of a scramble in the area. Somerville does just enough to force it to Ruter, and there was a horrible split second where I thought he's hit the crossbar and it's come down and it's not gone in. And then I saw the kind of that it was in the back of the net. And that was just the exclamation mark on a remarkable first half. That was it completely dead and buried after 40 minutes. And with Ruter getting his goal, you just knew that Leeds weren't going to let up, because he's a conductor when he's on, and he's been honking for weeks. Like, let's be honest about it. I'm sure there's a French word for honking. I know some French words, but I don't think we should start liberally sprinkling swear words throughout the podcast. But he has been honking, and his confidence has been on the floor. And interesting that Farke said he'd seen signs of life in training and thought, Georgie's back. And then it hadn't happened for him in the game. And we've seen a lot of sagging shoulders from Ruter. It was last night, wasn't it, that he walked out onto the pitch and you and I remarked about how, like, relaxed he looked. And yeah, I don't know what it was. And hopefully Ruter can put his finger on what it was so that he doesn't go through a period like he's just gone through again too often. But something changed. And whether that was simply that Leeds scored the first goal, whether it was that he produced that little backheel flick and he was like, oh yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do to teams. He was just irrepressible. And the goal was deserved. It was important for him. I think he really needed to find the back of the net. And it bodes well for Leeds, because you go into a final now, and if your star players are finding the back of the net or getting assists in the game just before the final, then confidence should be sky high.
Mm. I think it was absolutely the most important goal, because you could see the reaction from the Norwich players. There was an inquest going on after that. Just how many times they'd been cut open in transition. I know they had to go for it to an extent, but it was just so easy, and it was time and time again. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Ben Gibson, who's just lay flat on his face on the turf for basically the entire duration that Ruter's away celebrating in the corner of the West Stand and the South Stand. They knew they were beat. at that point, and that was 40 minutes or less than 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's for me, that's when it felt like, okay, start the party. Because yeah, I mean, it was so, so important that Rute gets that goal, because as you say, he's a conductor, he's a confidence player. And with his talent, confidence is such a factor. You know, if those initial flicks come off, then you're onto something. If they don't, or if you don't get that first goal, as you mentioned, then yeah, the game gets a bit trickier. And I do feel as though he feels that pressure, and you know, is trying too hard. You know when you try something, you're trying too hard, you're in your own head a little bit too much, and the things you attempt don't always come off. And yeah, it's like, right, okay, the next one I absolutely have to get spot on. And that, you know, it does end up affecting your performance. Leeds scoring the first goal, Rute getting his goal, meant he was able to just to ball out of his own accord. And yeah, ball out he did. He's been a joy to watch this season. I absolutely despise the fact that you said he's honking the past couple of weeks. I think that's absolutely no way to talk about a young Frenchman.
Où est la justice? Où est la justice, Joe? We have completely overlooked Ilan Meslier's big moment at 2-0.
Hey, I'm coming to that. I am coming to that. As the conductor of this podcast, right? Don't you forget it.
Think of yourself as the Rutter of podcasting, don't you?
Look, I've got the editorial flair, shall we say. Yeah, Ilan's big moment. It had to be a big moment. And yeah, he's not been the creme de la creme this season, but that save absolutely was. Big, big right paw to swat away Josh Sargent. It's a tongue twister. His dinked effort at 2-0 after Ampadu had slid and missed. It was very much a heart in mouth, Coran Bouche moment.
Nice.
I don't even speak French. I don't know where that came from.
Lovely. Loved that.
It was very much a heart in mouth moment, because you thought, right, if Norwich get back into this with 25 minutes on the clock and it's 2-1, the momentum shifts. And we're potentially, or rather the neutral is in for potentially an absolute classic of a championship playoff semi. Ultimately, that movement of Meslier's arm means that Leeds remain on top and are able to go and get that third goal and kill the game. So yeah, that's why you're wrong when you say that 2-0 was when you were convinced that Leeds were going to win, because of that.
No, I was convinced. Even as Sargent went through, I knew that Meslier would save that. I think I said so to you. I said, Meslier will save this with his right hand. Sargent slaughtered again, because he was kept very, very quiet, wasn't he? And that's the only time he got away. That was the only thing Ampadu got wrong all night. And just, you know what it reminded me of? You know when somebody goes up to try and like dunk it in basketball?
Yeah.
And a very large gentleman jumps up and slaps it away. Like, get that out of here. That's what it was like from Meslier. Yeah. And fair play.
Didn't you say someone else dunked on someone last night? You were there with quite a few basketball analogies.
I don't remember that. But you know, if it was clever and funny, then maybe it was me. Fair play to Meslier, because he did not imbue me with a sense of confidence on Sunday. I thought his kicking was problematic. Some of his decision making was scary, and actually, he was spot on against Norwich last night in the second leg when he had to be. And you know, Farke said when the keeper returns with a clean sheet, it's always world class. He said that on Sunday, and I thought, is it? Actually, last night, you know, one job. You had one job, Ilan Meslier, and you did it very, very well, and that is probably world-class goalkeeping, you know, when you're a spectator for the vast majority. And he was commanding for a couple of crosses, and his passing, I couldn't find particular fault with it at all last night. Maybe as well, it helped that Rutter was winning balls in the air high up the pitch, you know, but Meslier was very well protected too. You know, his defence, the back four were just magnificent. And it should have been 4-0 before halftime, shouldn't it? Like, if we're gonna,
when will this agenda of you know, picking on a poor French boy come to an end? I know exactly what you're about to mention, and yes, we all agree it should have been 4-0, but it should have been I who brought that up in a very neutral, compare type podcast conductor sort of way. Seems like you're going after
me all wrong. You have me all wrong, Joe. I was going to credit Norwich with some tremendous last ditch defending.
Mm. No, I'll be fair. He should have pulled the trigger. 6 yards from goal, just shoot, like just bang. Shoot. How wrong could it have gone?
Well, I don't know. Have you watched this season much? And Georgie's shooting at times.
Well, yeah, but come on, even from 6 yards.
I know, and that, I mean, if that goes in, maybe Wagner gets sacked at halftime. I don't know. Now that we know what we know about Norwich's decision makers, Delia's ruthless.
You do not make it to the top of the cookery game without
without
cracking a few eggs, hey?
Four nil would have just been a complete and utter humiliation. I mean, it was essentially anyway. The teams came off the pitch. Leeds looked so confident and dominant, and Norwich just looked beleaguered, battered, broken, bruised, bemused. It was, sensational.
I could tell that you were already thinking about the Wembley press food because you were salivating the entirety of half time like Pavlov's dog, like a bell had been rung in your head, and you were just thinking, oh, hors d'oeuvres. Or dairy-free hors d'oeuvres.
Mm. I didn't know Pablo had a dog, actually.
That's not funny.
So, the second half, Norwich's only hope, really, was to score a goal inside the opening minute of the second half and maybe just allow nerves to become part of the conversation again. What happened instead was Leeds should have scored a fourth inside 30 seconds of the restart. And that said to me, nothing's going to change here. Like, they don't have an answer to this. They don't have the requisite aggression or urgency. The confidence is gone. Their legs are probably gone because they've been chasing for 45 minutes. I mean, just chasing, shifting left and right, chasing shadows. And they were cooked. So, Peru, you know, absolutely phenomenal chance to make it 4-0 after the break. So, really, we should now be talking 5-0, shouldn't we, after 46 minutes? And then there was another chance after that he had. They just kept cutting them open. And then, of course, the fourth goal comes, and that's all she wrote.
It's curtains for the canaries whose wings were clipped.
Kamara again for the fourth goal. He's the one that plays
a different type of agenda that you have for the Finn in midfield, isn't it? Let me just fire up Glenn Kamara's Wikipedia here. Let's see, previous clubs. Well, I never.
Okay, look, previous clubs. I am a big fan of Colchester United. I've always thought they're a very, very well run club. So forgive me for having slight bias.
I cannot stress to the listeners how many times when we've had conversations about Glenn Kamara that you just every single time you bring up the fact that he's played in a European final. Every single time. And I tell you what, that wasn't with Colchester or Southend or Dundee. It was with who?
I didn't realise Finland had got to the Euro final. It's remarkable.
Has an answer for everything.
Get used to hearing it again, because I am going to bring it up between now. I'm going to write about it between now and the final, because there are not many players in the Leeds team that have played in a game of this magnitude, of this kind of atmosphere, crowd, expectation, whatever you want to call it, the build-up and everything. I think it could be very important for the final. But you kept saying it last night as well. Kamara's been superb tonight, and his ball into, I felt like there were times when he just saw there was a forward pass and a gap in which to play it, and he played it perfectly. And that was the one into Somerville for the fourth goal. You know, Somerville turns, how much space did Somerville have as like a second 10 last night? How many times did he pick up the ball like 40 yards, 30 yards from goal in space turn and run at Norwich. And then Nyonto takes his third shot of the night. Again, Gunn saves it, but it's so much on it. Firpo reacts quicker than anyone, and real composure from him to knock it back across goal for Somerville to poke in. And nice for Somerville to get a goal too, because the last few weeks have not been great for him either. He hasn't particularly played like the best player in the championship. You know, Sammy Morsy has called him in the last few days the best player he's played against this season. He was the one he picked out. There's got to be a little bit of mischief there as well as captain of Ipswich Leeds are about to play Norwich and you're tweeting, let's see what the boy Somerville has to show us today, has to offer us today. But Somerville getting a goal was good, I think, because it was timely for him and also deserved, because he created a lot of danger and a lot of problems for Norwich last night. And that, you know, at 4-0 then, you're thinking this could get a little bit ugly for Norwich. If Leeds want it to, this could probably be 7 or 8.
Yeah, sticking with Kamara then. And statistics are always difficult to sort of represent the effectiveness of a player of his, you know, his quality and what he brings to the team. Just the cool-headedness. But 71 passes out of 76 he completed, which, considering how much he was playing forward and, you know, one touch and escaping pressure, that's very impressive. I think his dressing room nickname is Snake Hips, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really saw Snake Hips last night. Some of the movement that he got out of pressure, just it felt as though that Norwich were playing at sort of 0.8 speed if Glenn Kamara was playing it at one speed. He was absolutely excellent. And I cannot wait to see what he does at Wembley, because you do not change that team. Which let's discuss it. Do you change the team? Who's your lineup?
No, you do not. You go Melier, you go Gray at right back, you go Rodon and Ampadu, you go Firpo at left back, you go Kamara and Gruev, you go Nyonto, you go Somerville, you go Ruter, you go Pirou. You have to, after a performance like that. There's no argument stemming from last night and the performance to drop anyone. The only argument I could see coming into play where Farke might surprise us is opposition-specific arguments. So something that he sees in West Brom or something that he sees in Southampton that he feels he needs to directly combat with a change to the lineup. I just don't know that I can see it. You know, you might have looked at Connor Roberts for right back with Sam Byram picking up this unfortunately timed hip flexor. Then Archie Gray goes and does that. That moment in the first half, the ball gets played up towards Jonathan Rowe, who's had a tremendous season. And I think you spotted it last night. He wasn't fully fit. He wasn't in his finest of fettles. And the ball gets played up. And it's a toss-up between him and Gray. Gray running back towards goal. Gray controls it, keeps it on the wrong side of his body, so Rowe can't affect a challenge, turns, runs away from him. Just a little slight swerve, a little slight change of the angle, takes him away from the next challenge. And then I'm sure he beat a third player as well. And then Leeds are in the Norwich half. And I think the ball goes out for a throw-in or whatever, but Daniel Farke applauding above his head, the crowd absolutely loving it. And
people actually getting to their feet because of what he's done.
Yeah, because a teenager has taken a moment of potential danger and turned it into an attack. He was the physicality that I really liked in his performance was his ball carrying. You know, how strong he seemed when he was on the ball and how difficult it was for Norwich to rob him of it. And he has got a few tricks in his locker, hasn't he, to keep the ball. You know, when he's down on the touchline and he looks like he's in pressure,
mm-hmm.
he's not the same as Kamara. Kamara does it differently, but Gray has got some really neat footwork. I don't know that you could drop him. What I loved, though, was Farke at full time. You know, the celebrations are in full swing. The entire staff and 99% of the squad are on a lap of honour of the pitch. And there's poor Archie Gray having his ear bent by Daniel Farke about some specific scene that Farke has recalled from the game. And he's pointing down to an area of the pitch down in the far corner and giving Gray the benefit of his wisdom. And I'm thinking, Archie just wants to literally bask in this atmosphere in something that he's never seen or done before. And here you are filling his head full of tactical goodness. And maybe it's clever from Farke because Archie will probably link that lesson forever with that moment. You know, you're not going to forget that, are you? And then Gray stands and just looks like at the West Stand and looks all around him. It looked to me like he was just taking it all in. Mm. Or he was absolutely fuming and affronted that his manager had chosen that time to give him a tactical talking to. And then the pair of them, they walk around the pitch and Gray joins Farke for the wave. And bless the ground staff. Farke tried to include them in the wave as well, and they didn't quite. I think they were just worried about their pitch, to be honest. They just wanted to get everyone off the grass so they can do whatever comes next. Probably, I don't know if they'd be fully relaying it, but they'll be chopping it up, won't they, and fixing it. Great scenes at full time, though, weren't they?
Well, I'm gonna stop you right there. We've forgotten to mention one aspect of last night during the game.
Oh, of course.
That was the substitution in the 83rd minute.
The testimonial?
Yeah. You leaned over to me and said, you know, it's remarkable. They've been so good tonight that they've been able to play a semi-final, championship playoff semi-final second leg, the final 10 minutes, as a testimonial.
Yeah.
But, and you're right. They did.
Classy of Norwich to send an opposition, you know, up for Liam Cooper. The West End... I think everybody started to turn their thoughts that way, didn't they? It was almost like a collective dawning of, hang on a minute, Cooper's down there warming up. Stick him on. You know, get him on because the game is won. This is likely, almost, I don't want to say almost definitely, it's highly likely to be his last hurrah at Elland Road. Mm-hmm. And I think Cooper's young enough to go and play somewhere else and play regularly. I think that's probably what he's going to want, especially if Leeds go up. You know, two promotions on the CV to the Premier League. Leeds stayed out of the Premier League for 16 years, and then for Cooper to be club captain for two promotions, two returns to the Premier League would be fantastic and a really great way to end his time at the club. So it was really, really good of Farke to stick him on, and really kind of, you know, the starting lineup to win the game 4-0, you know, by whatever it was, 70 minutes, 75 minutes, in order to allow that to happen.
Yeah, and then obviously at full time, there was a really nice moment with, you know, Cooper on the pitch with his kids and, you know, fist pumping the air. That's the sort of stuff that, you know, stays with you forever, isn't it? You know, he's been at this club for 10 years. I think it might even be 11 years.
No, it'll be 10 in... 10 in August, late August, September.
Yeah, I mean, again, thanks for the correction.
Facts matter, Joe, because if this was 11 years, he would be getting a testimonial, wouldn't he, this summer?
Yeah, okay. I think
he'll leave. Just shy.
Put the damper on it.
Yep, I'm gonna raise the tone again because last night it will have gone unnoticed.
Don't care. Don't want to hear about it. Don't care.
You do. You want to hear this. It will have gone unnoticed by you and everyone else, but Daniel James exacted the perfect revenge last night on Liam Cooper. Cast your minds back to not last summer, but the summer before. Leeds and myself are in Australia, other side of the world, very expensive. There's a JD and Adidas event in a nice bar in... I think it was Brisbane or Perth. It was Perth. I think it was Perth. And Jesse Marsh comes in and there's like some stools set up in front of a stage so that that Leeds fans across there can get the chance to ask some questions of their heroes and have some pictures and autographs. Liam Cooper comes in next and sits down. Dan James follows. And as Dan James steps up to the high stool, Cooper gets down and pretends to lift him up onto the stool. Dan James. And luckily I was able to capture that moment on camera to show everyone just how disrespectful it was. It was absolutely brilliant. Jesse Marsh laughed like a drain when he realized what was happening. And I know that a lot gets said about Jesse Marsh, but I find that really wholesome. Dan James waited almost 2 years. And then as Cooper, in his testimonial against Norwich, is up for a corner, or he's up for a free kick, first of all, Dan James sends it straight over the bar with a shot.
I wondered where this was going.
And then he's up for a corner. Cooper's literally motioning, put it on my head, and Dan James fails to beat the first man intentionally in order to exact his revenge on Liam Cooper. Well played, Dan James. He actually got booed for that. So maybe some people in the cop did remember. The booing,
no, I think though, it was sarcastic. Well, it was obviously sarcastic booing, but that shows how comfortable Leeds were.
Booing your players for not beating the first man and not letting your captain score on his last appearance is
because it's funny.
Superb.
Yeah, very, very, very wholesome, very good crack from all involved. And I'm sure that Dan James was thinking about that incident when he motioned to swing the corner in. Right, so we're looking ahead to Wembley then. Last time I went to Wembley, I didn't turn up for work the next day because I was sad, amongst other things.
So that's not a medical term, is it? Sad?
No, actually, the medical term is the big sad, is what I had.
Too sad to drive. That was your problem.
Too sad to drive? I'm not sure I was too sad to drive.
Over the limit.
No, I was too sad to open my laptop and write. Couldn't face it. I am planning on doing when we get to Wembley is when you walk up the steps into the press box for the first time, I'm going to record you going up there from behind.
Like you're a proud dad getting it ready for like Twitter.
Wee man's first game. Look at his reaction. That's what I'm going to do. And I will do that. So there'll be no after you. No, you go up the stairs first, Joe. Because I've got it locked. You'll forget that. I won't.
Could we do it though in the style of Rio Ferdinand asking someone to film him not stepping on the Real Madrid badge?
I hope there's a crest somewhere. If we could find
a crest in the press area, then
you know it'd be really funny. If there was, I don't know, given that there is a European Championships around the corner, if there was just an England crest on the floor somewhere. And look, I'm not going to say that either of us would walk around or walk over it. I'm just saying, let's just leave that one to the imagination.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Perfect. Wembley and God knows how many thousands of Leeds fans will travel to London. It will be an invasion. Ideally, the stadium will have learned some lessons from an event that was featured in a documentary, and it will all be very, very safe and very calm. Well, it won't be calm, will it? Calm will not enter the vocabulary from start to finish, no matter what happens. But there will be a lot of Leeds fans down there, and you would expect them to play a full part in making the atmosphere pretty sensational. A busy weekend for the stadium, busy weekend for British Transport Police, very busy weekend for the Met Police, because obviously the FA Cup final the day before, hopefully they'll not ruin the pitch, and it will be sparkling again a day later for the playoff final. Who do you want? Who do you want, Joe? You pick. West Brom or Southampton, who do you want?
Well, I mean, if you're asking me which championship team I want in the playoff final, I want Rotherham. But unfortunately, that's not possible. I want West Brom. I really don't want Southampton. I mean,
really?
I don't really have a preference. Do I? Well, I do have a preference. It's just that both teams are going to be difficult to face. That's kind of the whole shtick of the playoffs, isn't it? Southampton, I just worry that the size of the pitch will be a problem, given their possession style, tiring Leeds out. West Brom, I don't think have that in their locker. And I just don't see, I don't know, I don't see them playing the same way that they have done in the two games that they've played Leeds already this season. The two Southampton games, I just feel like they, Russell Martin tactically got the better of Daniel Farke in both. And that's what I'm worried about. Whereas with Carlos Corberan, I think Leeds weren't at it at the Hawthorns. You know, they were coming off the back of defeat on Boxing Day at Preston 2 days before. They weren't at it. And then at the beginning of the season, you know, this was still, what, three or four games in when Farke didn't really know who his squad was, who he could trust. You know, there were players that are now at the club who weren't at the club at the time. I think Kamara and Gruev were still at Rangers and Werder Bremen at that point. So, you know, I prefer West Brom.
Yeah, my problem with West Brom is just that suspicion that Carlos Corberan could elicit from them a defensive masterclass, and then some enormous galoot comes up for a corner and puts his size 8.5 head through the ball, and they take a 1-0 win. That would be a concern.
Hold on. Size 8.5 head. If right, so what's the scale here?
I don't know. Size 10 being the biggest. Size 8.5 being a very large head.
Okay, so what would your size head be?
I don't know. My head is not very wide, but it's quite deep.
That's not a word to describe.
The depth of my head from front to back, I've always imagined is quite large.
Right.
But obviously, it's something I shouldn't worry about or be insecure about, because you've obviously never noticed. Southampton would provide the opportunity for the perfect storybook ending to the season. You know, two defeats against them, that would be in people's minds a lot, and kind of proving actually, no, we can beat this team. We can get the better of them. Daniel Farke proving he can get one over on Russell Martin and stand at centre circle with his foot on a prone Russell Martin's chest and his biceps flexing like he'd just beaten him at WrestleMania. It reminds me a little bit, Joe, of when I tackled grade 5 music theory at school. The first attempt, complete failure. Second attempt, complete failure. I failed it a third time and then gave up. But, you know, it doesn't mean, just because that happened, it doesn't mean that Leeds can't beat Southampton at Wembley if that's the opposition they're presented with. On paper, I think, at the risk of this being clipped, you'd probably think Leeds would be heaviest favourites against West Brom. I don't know what the bookies would do with Leeds Southampton, nor do I care, because it's completely irrelevant. But it'd be the best game for a neutral, I think, Southampton Leeds. And we're not neutral, so again, we don't care. Just give us a winnable game that is won.
Yeah, just give us a winnable game that's won. Do you see, you know how playoff finals tend to be very close-run, cagey affairs? Do you see that being the case again this season, regardless of the opposition?
Yes. I don't think... I'd be incredibly surprised if Leeds were able to do to either of those two teams in a final what they did to Norwich last night. I mean, would I welcome it? 1,000,000%, yes. It would make all of our lives an awful lot easier. I'm just not sure I could see lightning striking twice. It's a game of such magnitude that whoever you play, they're going to be so up for it, aren't they? Mm. And I don't think you'd be able to steamroll them. So there's your challenge set, Daniel Farke. Prove me wrong and absolutely Muller somebody in a playoff final, in the most one-sided playoff final that has neutrals switching off at halftime because it's so over and done with. Give us that at Wembley. And then, you know, if we get that, you know what? I'd be happy for Blackburn Rovers to do the catering for the final. If that's what we were served up on the pitch, then, you know, I'll take whatever.
A feast of football sandwich on the pitch is what we expect, or what we hope for. Before we finish, because this will be the, well, actually it's the third last podcast of the season, not the penultimate one, but, you know, before we do finish, I do want to address something which we were chatting about last night before the game, and it's that every single member of Daniel Farke's backroom staff has the potential to be a Game of Thrones character. including Daniel Farke. If you know, just so, humor me here, listener, but think about the names that Farke's backroom staff, including Daniel Farke of House, I don't know, Baratheon or whatever. Yeah. Edmund Reamer. You can hear that one.
That's he sounds very... like a bad guy. He sounds like a bad guy, doesn't he?
Yeah. Christopher Domagala. Like he's from a far off land.
Yeah, he's coming with a sword to cleave your head right off on behalf of like a king. Yeah.
Even the likes of Christopher John. Like just a very like simple, he lives in King's Landing.
Or he's like the bastard son of some lord, and he's just like a simple farmhand, Christopher John. Not based on his character, Joe, based on his name. It's no slight on... I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
So just on the character of his parents, then?
Apart from when he's getting sent off.
Who else have we got in the backroom team?
Edward Wooten.
Yeah, again, he's another one in the category of, I don't know, King's Landing sort of nobleman.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was just... Yeah, just a thought. Welcome to the inner workings of Graham and I's shared brain on match days. And as I can see, the sunlight creeping in from my very shoddily set up podcasting studio. That is the time and the signal to say that this is the end for this week's episode. But not the end for Leeds United season. Hey, they will be going to Wembley. We will be there. Next Sunday, a week on Sunday, 26th of May, to watch them take on either Southampton or West Bromwich Albion. It's a real chance to break that playoff hoodoo.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have no poor playoff experiences at Wembley. And I have only really promotions from the Championship on my CV. So I'm expectant.
Have you been to Wembley?
No, that's been my first time.
Also, the video I take of you going up the stairs will be authentic then?
It will be, yeah. Yeah. Okay. We could do a Netflix documentary style video about it afterwards as well, where I talk about how, you know, this was a game I just wasn't going to miss, and whether I had a ticket or not, I was going to get in there and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, I think the chief football writer at the Yorkshire Evening Post probably is going to get a press pass for that game. Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see whether podcast conductors are also permitted, but I've got a feeling that there will be. Anyway, that's all from us on the Inside Elland Road pod this week. Thank you for tuning in. See you at Wembley. Bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.